other couple, but husband and wife and their little girl, is it?
She was a 13, 14-year-old teenager, and she came.
How did that come about? The same way that you had arrived at
the farmer was the farmer was a young farmer. He had gotten married not too long ago. When I arrived, their baby was maybe 6 weeks old. His parents had a farm with several cows. They were much better off than this farmer, than the son. So he was interested in additional income. So when he was offered to this lady with her anarchist helper, and she left after a few months, and when this Jewish family came, he gladly accepted it. It meant so much more money for him.
Do you think he was aware that he himself and his family were in danger by hiding Jews?
I am sure that he knew. However, the fact that I was more safe in the hiding place, the secret hiding place, was safer for him too. However, his need for money was quite high, because later on his wife's brother-in-law brought several times cows to that farmhouse to be slaughtered there. And at one occasion I remember that I must explain first about the village. The village was on both sides of a long road. One farm here, another there, and so on. It was very long, maybe 5 or 7 miles long. It was reported to us that at the very end, which was closer to the, let's say, the center of Holland, because we were the last farmhouse next to the dike of the inner sea of Holland. We were really at the end of civilization there. A rumor was mentioned by one farmer to the other. They had their grapevine, literally. Mm-hmm. They said some German that it was questionable or could not be trusted. Well, they were in the middle of slaughtering the cow. Two or three men with bloody rubber boots climbed, not using, as we usually did, a ladder to go in the hiding place, but the walls to climb up there on the pipe from the Niagara. Which was there? Do you know what Niagara? The Flushing. In order to get up there, we would have been given away by that, right away. So it was a mixture of, on one hand, yes, and he was immeasurable credit. On the other hand, he stretched his and our luck at times. Fortunately, it didn't go wrong. If it had gone wrong, wow, it would have been terrible. Both for him and us.
And he got you food. The woman brought you food.
I was a member of the family there. I became a member of the family. When I was alone, they even let me go outside and walk outside in the garden. They had land around it. In quotes, because you don't look Jewish. When the other lady, the first lady came, she looked Jewish. Equality. She was kept inside, I was kept inside too. When the Jewish family with the daughter came, same thing, we are not permitted to go outside.
Did you have, at any point, have false identity papers?
I got false identity papers only after the aborted attempt to counterattack next to Arnhem in 1944. And that didn't work, and the Dutch population of Arnhem had to be evacuated. I got papers which, in quotes, proved that it was one of the evacuees from there.
How did that come about? Was it Mad Tuesday or?
It was. It was probably way later, because the Mad Tuesday occurred, and I didn't know about that being in hiding there. Was way before. It was when they approached southern Holland, and the Germans thought that all of Holland would be liberated. Instead of that, only the southern part was liberated. And it took quite a while before they made the plans for the drop and the action in the area of Arnhem, which didn't succeed.
Tell me how you got the false papers.
I got the false papers from the underground. This was a heaven-sent occasion to type up papers, and I still have that original. And I had, right from the beginning, I had assumed a false name, which utilized my two last initials. I'm SWM, Simon Wolf Rocco, Wolf for Zave Rocco. So I left out the S and W for William and M for master. And that name in Dutch is on my false ID. With that, I could qualify for food ration coupons, which was extremely important, becoming more and more important then. Because the Germans started punishing all of Holland by not permitting any food to be transported. I didn't know so much about it. In fact, there was one occasion, probably around that time, that on a Sunday, I went with the farmer to visit his parents. And they had cows there. So they had one huge container with milk, and they knew I was hungry, and they were hungry too, but they permitted me to drink as much of that milk, which had been standing, so it had become cream practically, the top layer. They let me drink as much as I wanted, which I did. But for several months after that, I couldn't even hear the word milk.
So now you were not really in hiding at this point. You walked.
I was every night in hiding. In fact, later on, our hiding place was used by the son of a neighbor, Catholic, who had to hide in order not to be sent to Germany. And there was another relative of the farmer's wife who was there in hiding for the same reason. And there were sometimes, and he was Protestant. And me being the Jew, still very Orthodox then, interesting, we had some, most of our subjects were about food because we didn't have enough food. We were dreaming about food then. But there were some religious arguments there. Can you guess between who? Between the Catholic and the Protestant.
Right.
Much more than with the Jews. There were much more dollars there.
How long did this go on? This was in.
I started my hiding episode in August 43, and it lasted till May 45, till the end of the war. I was there all the time. At one time, when another relative of the farmer's wife was hiding in that hiding place, where we had to use at night a pail to urinate in, I must have missed the target. And explain how we found out. I came down when the time was arrived in the morning, where I was permitted to come out, which was usually around 9 or 10. We were kept there quite long because better safe than sorry. This is how the farmer's wife felt, probably. I urinated myself and I noticed a red color of the urine, which it could be due to beet or whatever. I didn't pay too much attention to it. When I entered the kitchen, which was next to the entrance hall, to wash myself, the farmer's wife asked, "Is there anything the matter with you?" I said, "No, why?" And she pointed her finger on the wall. And there was there a narrow red line. I had obviously urinated, bloody urine, next to the pail, and it had come through the cracks of the woolen ceiling and so on down there. From then on, I was under doctor's care. The doctor, which was called then, which was a trustworthy doctor, he said, from now on, he has to stay not in that place. He has to be where he can be easily accessed. And I was given a salt-free, protein-high diet. Now then, high protein. They bought a carb for me. Somebody could get hold of a carb. I love carb normally. It was without salt. It was awful. Taste, but it was good protein, so I tried it. Also later on, I was introduced willy-nilly by the farmer's wife to pork's fat, which I was not told what it was. It was on my plate, and I ate it, and it tasted excellent to me. And then later on, she said, "You know what you have eaten." Mm-hmm. And from then on, I quit holding kosher, and I was up until that time I was keeping as kosher as I could. Which meant that I would not eat any meat. I might have some eggs for protein. I remember at one time that I was eating the peels of apples or pears, and at one time even ate the peel, the outer peel of peanuts, which somehow we had there.
Well,
but from then on, especially with the farmer doing the slaughtering, where we got some parts of the organs such as kidney and liver and so on, I ate anything that I could
Was this some sort of infection that you had contracted?
Until this day, I don't know whether it was an infection of the kidney or whether it was a kidney stone, because I have had kidney stones since, and also my mother had kidney stone. It could have been just a kidney stone acting up. But it was never removed, as far as I know. It may have come out, but maybe it was a small stone that passed without noticing it. But I definitely was at that time considered in a pretty serious condition.
While you were there all this time, or before, were you wondering about the rest of your family?
All the time.
Did you have any idea what had happened to them? What did you think?
I assumed that they were sent to Poland. I only hoped that they would be would survive. Every Friday evening, I would cry myself to sleep by saying myself Good Shabbos, which was the traditional Friday evening greeting, of course. Plus every day praying for them. I couldn't swear to it, but I believe that they even took my tefillin with me, and I was laying the tefillin there every day, which was extremely dangerous. I know you're going to ask me about this kind of thing, so I might as well tell it now. One day I was alone with the farmer's wife, and I was mending stockings, which I learned to do, in the kitchen. And I heard at the back entrance, which was the far end of the farm, I heard the farmer's wife talk to someone. And I paid attention to it, and they were German. So I went right away to the second floor. After probably first seemed to me that no telltale signals would be left. I stayed on the second floor. I heard them walk and talk coming in to the kitchen and going on to the living room and to the bedroom. And then they came back, and I waited a little distance from the doorway I arrived at on the second floor, because I didn't know where they were going from there on. Maybe he would leave, maybe he would come up. The moment that I heard them come to the first steps on the stairs, I went to the far end of the second floor, which was like an attic. It was, you couldn't stand there except in the middle. And there was a window at the far end, and I jumped out of that window. Later on, I found out that this German had come there to discuss whether there would be any chance of locating there, of having German soldiers live there, which was done with other people. Fortunately, they didn't need that, what they wanted.
Had you heard of any Jews that were discovered in hiding?
When I was the second time in the Dutch theater prison, I saw in the center, when I was on the balcony, I saw in the center there were people standing, and they told us these are the S cases, S Straf in German punishment cases, and they were made to stand for hours on end.
So you escaped at that point, a close
yes.
call, you think?
Yes, that was my second. You mean by the jumping out of the window?
Jumping out the window.
Yes, it could have been terrible. I've had more occasions like this. I tried as best as I could to keep a Jewish calendar to know when the holidays were. I might be 1 or 2 days off, but I believed it was Purim of 1945 when I was sleeping in the hiding place, and I woke up. I thought it was already the morning, and in the morning I believe it was a man coming to deliver bread, a baker or a person would deliver bread. And it was my first impression. Then I paid attention. And maybe it was even simultaneously. I heard German, plus that the roof, the entrance to the hiding place, rose, and someone came in. It was the farmer himself. What I know from my own knowledge is that I got extremely scared. I was shaking. The adrenaline was obviously doing its job. My whole body was shaking. And I'm fortunate that they couldn't hear it, because there was wood that was less than half an inch thick. And There were several other things that went very far. There were a total of 10 men from the Army, Navy, and Air Force. They were looking for men and weapons, because Gentile men already had to work in Germany unless they had the special permit. They were critically needed. So the farmer's wife kept them waiting until her husband had, in her guesstimate, safely arrived in the hiding place. So they asked her, what takes you so long? She said, I had to get dressed and blah, blah, blah. Then they saw my coat, which I had left hanging there, a man's coat in the entrance hall. She said, hey, you say that your husband is in Germany, that he works there now? How come there's a man's coat here? And this farmer's wife, who usually was considered by us of being not too bright, she said, I do this on purpose, so that if any man will come here, he will believe or think that that another man is in this house. They came in the living room and found an ashtray. The Germans asked, hey, you're alone, and you say, and they ask her about smoking, she said, I don't smoke, but do you have an ashtray here? Fortunately, there was no ashes in it. And she said again, very fortunately, she said that, my baby is playing with it. They did not even check in the toilet. They did look in that part of the farm where the slaughtering had taken place way before that. But more importantly, there were wooden shoes there, more than was indicated by our supposed absence. Now, it must have been around Purim, because there was a full moon shining through a relatively small window. So you got there the contrast between a bright spot on the floor and the other shade. And they did not see those wooden shoes. It was another time that we were lucky.
Now this was Purim 1945.
This was Purim 1945.
So it's almost the liberation.
Yes. I have many more details that happened before. You want me to jump back?
Sure. Well, let's see. This is part two of an interview with Dr. Simon Morocco, conducted on Wednesday, February 26, 1986, at the Jewish Community Center. Last time we talked, you mentioned a couple of things which I'd like to go back to. One, you said that there was someone who told you that you would be able to get to England. And you were even went so far as to write a farewell note to your family.
A
farewell letter to your family. Did you write the letter?
I actually wrote the letter.
What did you say in the letter? Do you remember?
I don't think I directly remember, but if I have to try and guess, I explained them what the situation was and that I intended to do so, and I wished them well, something like that nature.
Was it a hard decision to make? I realize you didn't do it, but was it a hard decision to make?
It was hard, and then not, because I realized this might be my life sentence.
And the second thing also had to do with the letter. You said that you had gotten some correspondence from your parents when they were in Westerbork.
Yes, there were requests for food and for those protective glasses against the sandstorms.
Did they say anything else about what it was like in Westerbork?
I don't recall that they said anything. There is something that I recall regarding my younger sister who was with them at that time. I don't remember what the source was, but I was somehow informed that she was working outside in the fields, in fact, working in a potato field. And I may have mentioned it last time, when I was already hidden, I asked the underground to contact her and to advise her, or to convey my suggestion and advice to her to somehow to run away. And at that time, I may already have known that she was working in the potato fields, because I thought, hey, that's at least she's outside of the most populated part of Westerbork. It might be easier. But
Did she run? She didn't.
I think by the time that my message reached her, if at all, that she already had gone. She had already been deported from Auschwitz. And based upon the information from the Red Cross, she was sent to Auschwitz. By the way, about information from Red Cross.
Yeah, that was the other thing.
Did I tell you last time that I talked to a sister of the present cantor of Amsterdam, by the name of Moskowitz. And this sister of him had personally talked to my father in Auschwitz while my father was singing on a roof in Yiddish or cantoral songs. And he was working on the roofs, and there were Jews, women or whatever, were coming to listen to him, and the Germans found out and they told him to quit it. This happened when she talked to him in person. Was after the date that I was given after the war by the Red Cross as the date that he was killed. So I have some doubts about the validity and reliability even of the dates of the records of Red Cross.
But you got those dates from them after the war?
The dates from the Red Cross after the war, but after that I met this eyewitness who talked to him in person, which was several months later.
Remember approximately when that was?
Probably it was 1944.
When she had met him?
Towards the second part of 44, maybe.
The things that you wanted to cover again, loose ends, as you said, that we...
Actually, to add to it, what I left here is marked that I had not mentioned. Just a little vignette. The day after Germans conquered Holland, after 4 days, my younger sister Sarah and I walked to the main post office where our postal savings account was. We withdraw our monies. On the way there, we saw the Germans coming in, marching into Amsterdam. Right away, we felt that it might be safer if we at least take our savings out.
Well, can we stop you there? What did you say to each other when you saw the German army?
I think you asked last time also, what did your parents tell you, what, like in this case? I don't know whether we really talked that much. We were, in a sense, a quiet, relatively quiet family. We did not do what I, today, as a psychiatrist, definitely would do. We want to know what someone else thinks, feels, and what opinions that person has. If I think back, I could have known a lot more about my family, about my parents, my sister. I didn't even think of asking, what do you think, what do you feel, what opinion do you have?
We
assumed certain things. In other words, I can safely assume that both of us were, we thought it was horrible, it was awful, we had lost the war, and who knows what's going to happen to us.
So that's what you felt when you saw them?
Right.
Did they see you?
Did they what?
Did they see you?
The Germans?
The German troops?
Yes, we were just standing there.
Standing
on
the street.
It was the first day after they entered. They didn't even know whether they were Jewish. In fact, that came up later on, whether I looked Jewish. According to the farmer, I didn't look Jewish, and therefore I was permitted to go and walk and work outside the farm.
What else did you have to do?
This is regarding 1942. This is more or less like an observation now regarding them in retrospect. I had to develop this psychological anesthesia when hundreds, thousands of people around us were deported and I heard their names mentioned. And I had to protect myself against that. Even now, at times, I have remnants of that, meaning that feelings of happiness even, let alone feelings of sadness. I cannot permit myself at times to fully realize those feelings. It's almost like that habit from then is still with me at times. Sometimes I can. I remember, for example, when I was entering the ballroom after the chuppah of my son here, I was practically jumping, dancing with my wife. We have it on a movie. I felt really the full extent of the joy. And there are other times that I know it's happening, but it's almost like it's outside of me, like I'm an observer. And I feel there may be either a similarity and possibly even a connection with what happened then. When I, And I was taught, don't realize the full extent of what's happening around you, because it would psychologically kill you.
So the coping mechanism?
It's definitely, it's a protective mechanism. And still could be now with me. I told you about the story about where I hid in the morgue.
No, you were going to tell me about that this time.
I'm going to, okay. In 1943, I don't know the date, it was definitely before the razzia of the ghetto, in the central ghetto of Amsterdam. I was working in the hospital, and the Germans had told the Jewish council and the Jewish hospital that they needed a certain number of employees. So I was working there, and suddenly I hear over the PA that people are going to be, you have to go with the Germans, and were given instructions where to go. And slowly the names were mentioned, probably alphabetically. When my name was reached, the person who was doing the broadcasting said, Simon Vayevrach, Morocco. And he repeated everything, so again, Simon Vayevrach, Morocco. Vayevrach is in Yiddish, it is also perfectly good Ivrit. It means referring to, and he fled. Vayevrach literally means, and he fled. So I got a message, and I first moved as if I was going to report myself where I was supposed to go, and then I made a detour and ended up in the morgue of the hospital. This was either in the morning or early afternoon, and I stayed there for hours upon hours upon hours. And I didn't know whether the coast was clear or not. It may have been around 7 or so in the evening, perhaps even later, that I saw someone passing by. And I approached the person, and maybe he saw me also, but maybe I... And I asked him, what's the score? Well, do I still have to stay here and hide him or not? He had, was of course very surprised to notice that. They said no, they have gone already several hours ago. So it was one of the 4 or 5 times that my life was saved by pure luck. I remember the same year during Pesach. Normally, up until then, every Seder was celebrated at home. That year, we were asked to volunteer to lead the Seder for a limited number of patients in the hospital, because the wards were such in nature that maybe 30 or 40 patients could be together. And there were various groups like that. And I remember that I led the Seder that one night for a group of patients. After I escaped the first time from the Dutch theater prison, I stayed at home, I lived there, I cooked. I remember we had lots of potatoes. In fact, they had already started sprouting, but they were still very edible. I cooked them, and I think we had lots of green beans that were still left over, and I mixed those two. And so I had where to, I had a shelter, and I had something to eat then. On the door that led to the street of my parents' house, I had placed, after the first escape, a large notice which said, the inhabitant of this house, maybe even I had my name there, I'm not sure, but our name was on the door anyway, so they would have known who that was. The inhabitant of this house is still working in the Jewish hospital. My idea was that if this is there, then at least it won't be closed. Closed meaning that the house would be emptied by the firm by the name of Pulse, P-U-L-S, not Pulse. They would empty all the houses that had been the Jews had been deported from.
A moving company, is that
a moving company? Which was cooperating with the Germans, and then was sent to Germany or whatever. I had put that sign out for that purpose, and one every night. We lived on the third floor, and we had, from the third floor, quite a long flight of stairs. I went down and I double locked the front door so that they would have the heart.